Hi, everybody. Welcome to No Story is Sacred. We are four siblings who were raised by working freelance authors. And when you have a big family with two parents who are full-time writers, the craft of writing basically becomes a family business. We grew up talking about the art of storytelling. Now that we're adults, we're still talking about it, and we're inviting you to join the conversation. My name is Kat, and I'm the oldest.
I'm Brendan, right in the middle.
I'm Pippin, and I'm the older twin.
I'm Alex, the youngest.
Today we're talking about Star Trek Into Darkness, so spoilers and content warnings. For those of you who either haven't seen the movie or need reminding what it's about, Amazon's summary is... When the crew of the Enterprise is called back home, they find an unstoppable force of terror from within their own organization has detonated the fleet and everything is... I don't agree with a lot of this summary, by the way.
Neither do I.
Has detonated the fleet and everything it stands for, leaving our world in a state of crisis. With a personal score to settle, Captain Kirk leads a manhunt to a war zone world to capture a one-man weapon of mass destruction. As our heroes are propelled into an epic chess game of life and death, love will be challenged, friendships will be torn apart, and sacrifices must be made for the only family Kirk has left. His crew.
What movie did the Amazon synopsis writer watch?
Cause... I suspect a better movie.
Here's the thing.
Just pulling that apart.
Yeah, I mean, well, the thing is, like, I tried to find a different summary. I went to IMDb's. IMDb's was somehow worse. I genuinely think that this is what people thought the movie was about, which is horrifying because that's not what happened. It would have been better, I agree. There was no chess game. There was no one man weapon of mass destruction. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Manhunt is a bit of a broad interpretation.
Yeah. a loose interpretation.
A war zone world. That would have been cooler than what they had.
5 minutes on Kronos?
No, not even on Kronos.
They weren't even at war with Kronos yet.
We saw some Klingons, and then they got shot.
The Klingons were there, and then they were not.
And they had, I don't know if I'm the only one who... And I'm sorry to turn this blue so early on. Am I the only one who thought they had, just these enormous cock rings on their faces?
Ooh.
Just me? Okay. Why is this the Prince Albert look? So...
Because they're Klingons, they have to be edgy.
Okay, so... everything has to be edgy.
A little bit.
Romulans have to be edgy. The only ones that don't have to be edgy are the Vulcans, because everyone knows that, everyone knows that they're total stuck-ups.
Vulcans are fucking wild.
And two, if you try to mess around with Spock, people would throw their hands up in the air like they just didn't care, but in a bad way.
Because they care too much.
Too much. But everybody else has to be so cool. I don't know.
So I almost wonder, by the way, I wonder if this synopsis was written based on an earlier screen treatment.
That makes a lot of sense. Because there's oddly a lot of little tiny things that are in the background that make you think, no, this used to be connected up better than it is.
The connective tissue.
I put forward to you the fact that there were any Klingons. Tribbles. Look, it's a minor thing, but...
Clams and
Tribbles are a known, situation. And also...
That's true.
Why the hell did McCoy have a dead Tribble on board?
That's in my notes!
Okay, here's the other problem. Logically within the story, why does he have it? But from a storytelling perspective, that is repeated information. We already know that this shit brings people back to life from the little girl that we got trashed in the beginning. Why do we need the Tribble? Because nobody gives a shit about Tribbles. Everyone gives a shit about dying little girls.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, and also...
To be fair, I give a shit about dying Tribbles.
Also, what gave McCoy the idea to shoot a Tribble full of blood? Because his blood is super regenerative.
Because science.
I'm sorry, Bones is no Tony Stark. He's not doing shit for shits and giggles, okay? I mean, if he was, he's a different kind of character than we're seeing on the screen. And I'm not saying that would be a bad thing. That would be awesome. But
Damn it, man, I'm a doctor, not a billionaire playboy philanthropist.
I'd watch that.
I'd watch that in a heartbeat.
Well, the wife did take the planet in the divorce, and, well, he was being literal. She took the planet.
The planet. That's nice. I like that. I agree with you, Brendan. I think that this summary is a sign of an earlier draft that probably would have been a lot better.
Quite possibly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't know. There's just all sorts of weird things that they decided to do in this in the original screenplay. Like,
Oh, have you actually looked at the original screenplay?
Well, no, just based on watching the movie and my notes here. Mm-hmm. Like, I think they wanted to start off with, like, a theme of the movie being, you know, family and all that. But then it's like, no, that's not interesting. Let's make it Vengeance. And then name that big ship Vengeance because...
Subtle.
Subtle screenwriters.
I missed that.
The USS Bigger Dick was not, in fact, named Bigger Dick. It was the USS Vengeance. What are they having vengeance for? Vulcan, I guess? But we're fighting the Klingons who had nothing to do with it? Whatever.
You'd think the movie would have been about fallout from the whole Romulan thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, you'd think so.
Wait till you guys hear my rewrite.
Well.
Wait till you hear it.
Get right into the meat of what we're actually trying to do here.
What
are we going to attempt to do here? I don't think we've ever done this before, have we?
We have not, no. So I believe what we're attempting here is, you know, and if this was a good movie, it would be a situation where we're just seeing how we could change this and make another good movie. But in this case, this is a terrible movie. And so what we're doing is we're setting about how we each would fix it. And trying to do it from a almost a working writer's perspective. So practical changes that address both the story and also what you're attempting to do with the audience.
Oh, are we trying to be practical? Oh.
Money,
well, these are
no
all
object.
First drafts.
Yeah. It's questionable about the level of draft mine is. But anyway.
I didn't spend like a few days working on this. What?
I've got years of rage built up in mine.
We'll get to that in a minute with Pip's treatment.
You know, recall that woman and saw my notes as I was writing them on my train ride back here.
I was late picking up Alex from the train station because I was still writing my notes. So
you're a good sister.
I'm a great sister. Thank you.
So I think we might have opinions.
That is the point.
Wait, about being siblings or
about this movie, but also about each other. Let's be real.
About my relative siblingness. All right, so I'm a little hesitant to go first, just because I feel like mine may be more raise the ground and sow salt in the fields.
Oh man, that's how I was going to describe mine.
All right.
Yeah. Well, so, should we go from who has the least to say to who has the most?
How do we know though?
Well, I didn't take any notes on the actual what I would do.
Wait, guys. Here's the thing: if worse comes to worse, Brendan will just edit us around.
Thanks, guys. Thanks.
Well, Brendan will fix all of our fuck ups.
Story of my life.
Wow.
Okay. All right. I actually have a very practical beginning. I'm going to start hell with the rest of y'all.
Okay.
Right? So straight up, I am scrapping the majority of this. I'm a big one for building it from the bedrock, and Star Trek has really fabulous foundations, and so that's what we're going to bring to bear here. First, you have to think to yourself, what is the purpose of the story? From both the practical and blah, 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 blah with you. You're introducing new viewers to Star Trek. We're picking up the ones that we picked up from the first movie, but a lot of them do not know anything about canon. We've nicely tied off the fact that we don't know anything about canon by just changing the universe. Kirk's dad dead and Vulcan's blown up. So you can mess around with a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing you want to do is you want to revitalize old viewers. So people who are old fandom, you want to make sure that there's not just something for them, but you're getting to the heart of what Star Trek's about, because that's why they're fans. And finally, Finally, you have to build off of the first one. So stuff that happened in the first movie should have consequences in the second. Am I right?
What?
Whoa, 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 whoa.
This is too far. Consequences too far. For our actions?
This is crazy talking.
And so it has to come down to what makes Star Trek Star Trek. You know, space is a final frontier. Exploration, meeting new life. And, like the American frontier, probably screwing that new life over. Except the point of Starfleet is to try and avoid that as much as possible. Which brings us to the two things that absolutely should be kept from the original movie. The Prime Directive and the war with the Klingons. So the Prime Directive gets brought up early in the movie, and then it gets ditched in favor of, like, the related but not actually synonymous thought of, is there anything you would not do for your family? These are both really, like, that's a great line. I love it. It doesn't really have a lot to do with maybe what the movie turned into. In actual canon, what we have Shatner's Kirk saying regarding captain's oaths or what have you is, a starship captain's most solemn oath is that he will give his life, even his entire crew, rather than violate the Prime Directive. You know, the idea is, there's already an answer to, is there anything you would not do for your family? And the answer is, violate the Prime Directive. I wouldn't do that. Like, that's a huge part of Star Trek. Because frequently they end up fucking it up anyway. But that's the ethical dilemma. And as a brief side note, in case people did not really understand what the point of the Prime Directive was, because I'm not sure it was really well defined in the movie, because our point of view character obviously is the crew of the Enterprise, and they're all like, ha ha ha, fuck this.
As you know, Bob, we have to follow this.
But why? No good reason. Lol. But the idea is, you know, right. The Prime Directive is the idea that we don't fuck around with helping or improving or even destroying civilizations that have no chance of fighting back, because that can have long-lasting consequences that you probably don't want to be personally responsible for. If the movie was about that, if it was about that, that would have been, like, really diving into it. That would have been fantastic. Because, again, if you look at the original series from which this timeline has diverged, you know, our two big baddies, generally, were the Romulans and the Klingons. Romulans we dealt with in the first movie. Klingons would be great to deal with in the second. Both of these groups are conquerors. They want to expand their empires. The way to do that is to take over other planets. Either those planets are going to already be part of the Federation, so they're, you know, going to have, you know, mutual protection, whatever. Or they're going to be less civilized planets, which means that they're violating the Prime Directive, which is our deal, not theirs, but that's why we're all fighting each other. Mm-hmm. Because it's a big, you know, ethical value, etc.
It's a big, complicated universe.
It really is. But it can be, hideously enough, it can be brought down to this simple question. It can be brought down to, which is more important? Is the Prime Directive important? Is it valuable? That's a well that the Star Trek course has been brought to over and over again, and honestly, it's an important well, and they haven't come up with a good answer because there is no good answer. Here's where my plot, quote-unquote, goes. Again, we hit Romulans the first movie. Second movie, make it about the Klingons. You can keep a lot of the basic features of the movie we actually got. Sabotage, provoking war, secret warships, and secret dockyards. Uhura being the only damn person in the Federation, evidently, who speaks Klingon. Which, by the way, if you bring her more to the forefront, fixes, to a certain degree anyway, the women problem of this movie, which I have to say,
God.
Carol What's-Her-Face did not fix Miss Underwear everything.
Oh my gosh, she did nothing in this movie.
No, I mean, she was there to fix the women problem, but it's not a fix, is it?
Actually, I think my final note in watching the movie mm-hmm. here, final two notes, gee, Carol didn't really do much, and Carol doesn't show up ever again after this movie.
Oh, God, that's right. Yeah, you're trying to get, you know, one of the big things with the first movie was too many dicks on the dance floor, and this was theoretically a fix for that, but not really, was it? Uhura's position ends up being relegated to essentially a useless conversation with Klingons because it goes nowhere and they all get shot up, and fighting with Spock. That's it.
And to point out, you know, her conversation ended with her getting choked. So, you know, that's a positive image.
There you go. I forgot that. Yeah. So, I mean, you can keep all of these major, you know, plot devices. You can keep these, you know, structural elements, how you frame them. And you can even bring back the question of what would you do for your family? because honor and family, and those are really important to Klingons. So the question is, what's more important? Whose values are actually more important? And does, in fact, our valuing of our values, of valuing the Prime Directive, get in the way of letting the Klingons have their values? So that's where I would start. That's how I would forget the eugenics war, forget Connie. There are a lot of Easter eggs you could throw in a useful way. Those tribbles could have been useful. The fact that Harry Mudd was, thrown around because it was Mudd's ship and his traitor clothes. Mm-hmm. The fact that Klingons didn't used to have ridged foreheads. That was, a great thing that got brought up during Deep Space Nine.
I thought the Klingons just don't like to talk about
it. They don't like to talk about it. But, this is where we could have taken the joke aspect of that and made something serious here.
Not to interject here, but serious question. Is there stuff in the comic books or supplemental material for this movie where they explain what the hell happened on Kronos?
For this movie or for in general?
For this split universe.
I don't know. I mean, and that pisses me off, honestly, because the Klingon Federation relationship is so important over the course of all of the series. Enemies to lovers. It's one of the things that makes Star Trek Star Trek. And the fact that it's not coming into play is why there are so many people who are like, this isn't a Star Trek movie. Why am I watching this? This is, that's why there's so much grief. So anyway, you get Captain Koloth from the Klingons in there. You could have done so much stuff. I want to find out how the Klingon Empire is different following Kirk's dad's death.
So to sum up your kind of approach to the story treatment, it's changing it from Wrath of Khan the Return of Wrath of Khan, whatever. Mm-hmm. Changing it instead to a kind of philosophical discussion about each the Federation and Klingons' approach to what their expansion and Prime Directives are, essentially.
Mm-hmm. With lots of explosions, obviously.
Oh, well, of course. Yeah.
You gotta have explosions. I don't mind having tits. I mean, that's not something I'm against. They just have to be,
in context.
They have to be in context. They have to be necessary to the plot.
Justified tits.
Damn it. I want contextual,
tits. The word's tits. But yeah, yes, I think that getting the history, the background of the Federation Klingon war or conflict would have been a good way to go about it. I'm sorry, what was that? who's giggling?
You said conflict.
Can we all take a moment here? Who giggled hugely when Spock said fucking discernible reason?
Thing about that entire scene, right?
Yep.
When I was watching it in the movie theater when it first came out, the moment we panned down to Kirk, I started laughing. and I had to smother it, and the person I was seeing it with thought I was crying.
Oh,
and I had to go, no, this is just really funny, and I shouldn't laugh in a crowded theater at the death scene. No.
You laugh at that crowded theater. You laugh hard.
That scene was so awkward.
I kept on making furious notes here. I guess this is the engineer in me is why couldn't we send a robot to do this?
Oh my God.
Wasn't there a cyborg on the bridge? I mean, there are options here, people.
I have a lot of comments about the... I'm not even a scientist. And I'm saying, I'm pretty sure that's not how gravity works. That's not how artificial gravity works. I have one that says the ship is not... Something that you create, you build in space is not a submarine.
Nope.
Which they lampshaded a bit, but I'm like, no, you're still wrong. Stop it.
I question that whole beginning plan. How did they get the ship in there without being seen?
Oh.
Nighttime, Pip. Nighttime. Come on.
Oh, and also, I'm sorry. Since when does Earth not have a defensive system against incoming? We have that now!
I wrote that several times in the finale. It was a point of constant frustration for me, because here we are, the ship is battered all to hell, and I can shine a flashlight from the bridge and signal San Francisco or whoever is watching from Earth. They're probably going like, oh, hey, two ships are fighting on the moon. Is that weird? Should we send somebody to investigate? Oh, hey, that both ships crashed in San Francisco.
But
should we send police?
But they wouldn't even crash in San Francisco, though. They wouldn't crash. They wouldn't make it to atmosphere.
Part of the plot of the first movie is trying to get the codes to drop the Earth's defense systems.
Well, they're Starfleet ships.
Ooh.
And actually, that's something that ties into, speaking of segues, that ties into a script treatment that I was working on, but I don't know if we want to jump right into mine or...
Go ahead.
Al or
Pip wants to
go
for it?
No, it's on you.
Oh, I'm going to actively fight with Kat, so you go first.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We'll take it to one side, Pip. Hey, what's going on? Sorry.
Yeah. Speaking about Earth Defense Forces, that's actually one of the things that I was starting to kind of look into when it came to developing my screen treatment, which I actually keep a surprising amount of the original movie, because I was figuring I'd want to try and tweak without changing everything necessarily.
You fool.
Yes. But among other things, one of the changes I made is that Marcus there, he's not the head of Starfleet. F that noise. He's pretty much the he's the head of Starfleet's defensive capabilities. A branch that's recently been given more power since, hey, remember that time about 3 years ago when Earth almost got destroyed?
Good point.
But like any man in his position, he's wanting more influence and power and stuff like that. So my screen treatment is a bit more – I wanted to try and push a bit more of, you know, his grab for power. And so I was keeping a lot of that thing of like starting shit with the Klingons in order to make a false flag attack and thus actually essentially start a war with the Klingons and get himself more power, because – what does a person in power want, but more of it?
To be fair, I will say that actually that was something that I liked enough that I wish that they had developed better. Was the sort of false flag stuff. But go on, you're saying.
Yes. That's the entirety of my plot, actually, mostly. So among other things, because I kind of like some of the mystery of this, you know, kind of family and stuff like that. And I was kind of trying to work on this subversion of the prodigal son story.
So in what way?
So, you know, you have in the prodigal son how he goes off and does debauchery and stuff like that, comes back to daddy, and all is forgiven. Yay, a party is thrown.
Okay.
In this, the change I'm making to Benedict Cumberbatch's character.
You're keeping Cumberbatch?
Like,
all right.
I like Cumberbatch. Come on. He's a good actor. I like him. He has an awkward face, but hey, come on.
He's not Khan, but go on.
That's the thing. He's not.
Oh.
The twist.
Nice. You keep him John Harrison?
The twist is in backstory that I haven't fully fleshed out yet, because come on, I'm not going to spend a week on this mostly, is that Marcus's original background was in these kind of secret ops here. And post USS Kelvin, that's when they discovered the USS Botany Bay. And
which one's the Botany Bay?
The Khan ship.
Is that from the third movie?
That's Khan ship.
Oh, okay. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. That's, that's the ship that was what Space Seed took on, whatever.
Okay.
And so him being brilliant guy, whatever, brilliant in air quotes here, is like, oh shit, this is a treasure trove of potential potential resources here, revives them, and that's how we start getting high advances in Starfleet technology that were ongoing for the last, you know, how old is Kirk? 26 years?
Yeah, some of it. Sure. Let's ignore Chris Pine's actual ages.
So they've been, well, whatever Kirk's age is, canonically, I don't know, 30? So,
okay, go on.
This entire time, you know, at least initially, they had the, you know, highly advanced super beings, helping develop new tech for the fleet and you know, they're getting more power, more influence. Marcus, just in time, you know, kind of figures that, oh, hey, Khan's kind of a douchebag and is going to backstab me. Puts everyone on ice, except for Khan's very young son. The idea being, hey, we can, you know, brainwash this guy into an asset, and we'll have, like, super intelligent Starfleet agents, something like that. From there, I actually kind of kept the cold open. I didn't want to change too much with it, leading into Kirk being chewed out for violating the Prime Directive.
Mm-hmm.
And this stems into a bit more deep conversation between him and Pike about, you know, what it means to be responsible. Why are you fighting? Why do you do what you do? So, Pike more or less takes the metaphorical bullet for Kirk there and, you know, gets relieved of command of Kirk and gets shoveled off to a desk job because we don't really want to have him in the movie again. He's an emotional crutch for Kirk, and rather than killing him off.
Side note, did Captain Pike get fridged?
Yes.
Yes,
yeah.
He did.
Yeah, he
got
died.
Fridged to for the emotional male whatever.
Bonding.
Poor. That's okay, because he was emasculated to begin with because he had a cane.
Yes.
So. Good point.
Yeah.
So
thank you.
I'm keeping Pike alive, just, you know.
Yay!
He sacrifices his career more or less for Kirk because he still believes in Kirk because he thinks of Kirk as a son and vice versa.
Aww.
Yay, father-son relationships. That's one of the themes I'm exploring in the movie. It's less family, more, you know, kind of that father-son dynamic.
Actually, here's a question. Pip, you've watched all the TOS.
Yep.
Was Kirk hedonistic, or was he just, I'm in love with love, which happens to coincide with making love with you?
I think it was more the latter. He's always seemed like a professional to me.
Yeah.
Kirk, you know, has a lot of
libido.
Love. I mean, yeah. Listen, I realized what I was going to say, and realized it was going to sound weird. And I'm trying to remember more of the series and not the, like, meme of him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the meme.
And he does sleep with a lot of women. but I'm not sure it's so much hedonistic so much as he actually does care about them in that moment. It's just.
But that's the thing. New Kirk doesn't really have that.
New Kirk is messed up.
Yeah.
That's true. That's the nice thing about killing off his dad early on is that we're very established that he's got some brain problems, like that he's got some emotional issues.
Yes.
Yeah. And also, you remember that the original series had the problem where it couldn't do overarching plots.
Yep.
Very true. It had to restart, and so you had to have these romantic interests, you know, one after another.
Of course.
I know what I said. the thing is, a lot of his love is a love for his ship and a love for his crew.
That's true.
One of the reasons it doesn't work out with Carol or any of the women in his life, and I'm going to say men too, because it's a new age.
Once you sleep with an alien, I mean.
Yeah. But the reason it never works out with them for long is because he'll always go back to his command. And his crew, because those are the people that he values.
Okay.
And it's a bit.
No, I like that.
It's a bit self-sacrificing because, you know, these are the people he has to be here for. And a bit a legitimate belief in what he's doing.
Of course.
And that's something else that's missing, at least from the beginning of this film, which could have been developed, which is that, no, Kirk's still in love with the idea of being, you know, I get to have a ship.
Yeah.
Woohoo. And this movie could have been a really great way to be like, well, what do you really value? What is it that you value? Again, bringing home family, bringing home, you know, the values of the Prime Directive. I really like Brendan. I really like, everything you had to say about, I like the idea of turning, that Admiral into, space defense, tying it back into the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
Correct me if I'm wrong. It sounded like Harrison was the kid.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Son of
that was great.
Son of Khan. There, you know.
I thought that was really good because then Khan was supposed to be this mastermind, but his son would be the next generation, the second photocopy.
And the thing is, you know, not having that two-dimensional thinking, Captain.
Yeah,
none of the weaknesses.
Well, except he'd have all the fucking weaknesses, because let's face it, he was dumb. But maybe in your version, he's not.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, no, I thought that was all really good. I like that.
Yeah, and
it takes away my Klingon thing. So
actually, that's Act One. Act Two.
Oh man, we're getting
alerts go off, and three Klingon warbirds have entered into the neutral. Have entered from the neutral zone. They're incurring into Starfleet space.
Hot.
And Admiral Marcus there orders the Enterprise crew in person to go pursue and essentially show the fact that we got bigger dicks.
Nice.
Now,
I do have a very bigger dick.
And one of the side effects of Kirk violating that prime directive there is that Harrison there is put on board as a liaison to Admiral Marcus. So they go out there to the, you know, edge of Federation space there. And one of the weird things I found about these movies, and I think the newest Star Wars movies are also making this weird now, is, man, warp travel's gotten really fast nowadays. It's like, it seems like it was like 50 seconds from Earth to Kronos. But that's beside the point. That's a rant for another day.
That's engineering. That's science talk.
Yeah.
Save that for later.
Yeah, save it for later. Now, what happens here is that the Enterprise utterly trounces these ships. It's like, it's, well, not utterly, there's like some space action, but like, it's not really intense on the Enterprise, which you'd think would be weird. And it is,
it's a science ship.
Harrison's really pushing, you know, like, you know, we have to follow orders. We have to, destroy this ship. And this is where, like, you know, Spock's like, you know, maybe more in, you know, insubordination, but matching with morals starts kicking in, as well as, you know, fighting for stuff that's right and all that, yada, yada, yada. Instead of outright destroying the ships, you know, Kirk orders to have them be disabled. What is weird is they disable the ships and they have the time to, you know, do a quick scan, and they find there's no life signs on board.
Oh, that's awesome.
There are the 72 capsules inside. And the thing is, they go, you know, instantly they form an away team. Harrison is really keen on getting on board because he's gone from being a cool cucumber to starting to have a bit of a weird edge. Like, he knows something because he does. And they go aboard. They find that it's actually the residents of the Botany Bay. And that's when Harrison flips the fuck out and more or less transports all the Enterprise away team off the ships, steals them all, and goes at warp away. Enterprise is about to be in hot pursuit, but that's when Marcus's hand is revealed, and it was all kind of setting up like a, like fact that like, oh, hey, Enterprise, you were just, you know, you just destroyed those, Klingon ships there. What the hell? This is the neutral zone. But yeah, that's a little hazy. I don't quite know how that would work yet. Maybe they were more or less lured into there without being fully aware, sabotaged, whatever. I don't know. Keep that aspect. That's a little bit hazy. Yeah. What's that?
Let me back you up here. Mm-hmm. How did the capsules get on board? I'm not sure I'm following that logic. How did the capsules get onto the Klingon?
Well, that's the thing. One of the things I was kind of toying with is whether or not I wanted to keep Scotty aboard one of the ships, because Scotty is awesome and can do no wrong, and ain't nobody's going to be teleporting Scotty without his permission. I mean, come on. He he made the equations that power pretty much all the advanced transporters that Starfleet uses nowadays. So I'm thinking that he was aboard one of the other vessels and is doing his engineering shit. and through dialogue with Scotty, it's revealed that the warbirds more or less just look like warbirds cosmetically, but Scotty would recognize Starfleet engineering standards.
Holy shit.
So the ships were all just meant to more or less create attacks of provocation from the Klingons. They were maybe more counting on the warships to destroy the Enterprise, but Harrison, surprise, surprise, had been suspecting for a while that Marcus was hiding something with this attack. And the confirmation that the pods were on there is the last straw, and he goes crazy, yada, yada, yada.
Can I drop for you this thought? Mm-hmm. If you want to get both the Klingons and Starfleet involved in this, what if the defense guy or whatever...
Marcus, yeah.
Admiral, has, has some captured Klingons, as Ooh. One does. And what if he's killed them? They're dead. and they're on, and he has them stuffed onto those ships so that when the Enterprise destroys those ships, then,
the Enterprise killed the Klingons. Interesting.
Enterprise killed the Klingons, and the Klingons themselves have been searching for these people. Maybe they're important or what have you. And so the Klingons are then involved. It's a matter of honor. And Starfleet's fucked, and it's like, nobody's gonna be looking to see whether or not those ships are Starfleet based if there's Klingon bodies around.
Wreckage is wreckage, right? Yeah. I mean,
yep.
I mean, if they just confirm that some of the biological matter was Klingon, definitely. I mean, the rest is just carbon. Exactly. So that's more or less the plot I was working with. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But if you disable the ships instead, suddenly you have people going on, or you have Scotty wandering around and being like, what the fuck's with all these dead Klingon bodies laid out neatly in rows?
And oh my god, what the hell?
Yeah. So I think that you could have had, and so that also brings for the audience a certain measure of, well, shit, the Klingons aren't necessarily, like, yes, they have opposing views, but they did not come out well of this either.
No. That's actually, that's the problem I was kind of running into toward Act 3 is because I don't know a lot about what happened to the Klingons between movies. Like, I guess they held the Romulan crew from the future as prisoners, but then they busted out, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think I've gone too long here. That's the gist of it.
I kept interrupting. That was my fault.
No. But the gist of it is then what happens is the basic cat and mouse game, and Marcus revealed as the mastermind, but the big bad ends up...
It could have been an actual chess game?
Yes. yes, but the thing is, the actual grandmaster chess player, it was Harrison, who I'm toying whether or not escapes at the end of the movie. I mean, the pods don't, but I'm thinking Harrison goes off into unknown space to maybe rear his head again later on.
Well, yeah, and frankly, if both the Klingons and Starfleet are out to get him, that makes a nice setup for a future movie where, like, now it's time for the Klingons and the Federation to maybe work together against a common evil.
Hold their hands and, I don't know.
Make a wish.
Sing kumbaya.
Okay. but yeah, so, no, I like a lot of what you did there. I like a lot of that. Oh, yeah.
Fuck Into Darkness. How about that?
Ooh. Uh-huh. That's,
so it sounds like name. Al might have some story treatments then.
The spicy
then.
Version?
The spicy version.
Yeah.
Into Darkness at night.
Well, we're back from a break. And I have my version, And not as involved as either of you guys is because I don't have that kind of time.
Wow.
Ouch.
Wow.
Burn.
Oh, no. No.
That hurts me in all three of my feelings.
Yeah. Well, I do have that kind of time. That's precisely my problem on the train.
You're busy getting girls' names. I know what's going on there.
So, a big thing with the Star Trek Into Darkness is that it has two problems going for it. Its plot and its characters. My notes on characters kind of went to shit, so let's just stick with plot. It suffers from too many eggs in one basket. You have...
Amen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You have the thing with Admiral Marcus, and his militarization of Starfleet. The rising tensions between in the Federation and Klingons. And Khan. At most, you can have two of those, And I'm suggesting you that you pick one and go with it. So
maybe like a hint of the third to set up the next movie.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, and to remind the audience that's the bigger universe. But yeah.
So one of those plots is essentially yours, Kat, with the Klingons.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has been hurt by the Romulans. There is now a power vacuum. Now that with the loss of Vulcan. That is a...
Oh.
Nice. Oh, yeah. Very nice. Yeah,
and...
Holy shit, I forgot. Vulcan was a big fucking deal.
A
few billions lives.
Just as a side note, my notes actually have... actually says, do you think Spock wins all of his arguments with... Do you remember the time my planet died?
In the third movie, yes.
Well, my notes... my notes...
All right, keep going.
My notes say he was okay. His planet blew up, so anything he does is kind of for that. But no,
justified.
So have the Enterprise crew send them off to Kronos on a diplomatic mission.
Ooh.
Okay. Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
And
bring in the point of the Federation. Yep. Good.
And remember, the Enterprise is meant to be nerdy scientists.
Yeah.
And diplomats. True. They're not the Enterprise is not actually military.
The Starfleet in itself is not a military venture.
They're not meant to be.
Yeah.
They're a peacekeeping armada.
Talking briefly about Star Trek, the original series, they were explorations. That's a bunch of scientist nerds and sometimes diplomacy because they had first contact. Next Generation, they were diplomats. It was a diplomat class ship. They had, really nice food and stupid uniforms. Deep Space Nine, they were holding down the fort to try to, give a sense of stability in an unstable zone. Not exciting, except it was. And Voyager, even more science nerdy. Even more! They were the nerdiest of all of them. And, we saw how that worked out. But yeah, they're a bunch of nerd explorers. Oh, yeah. That's it.
That's kind of my problem with these movies is that they are too actiony. I mean, Trek always had them at low home point, and now we must battle. But they avoided it at all costs. I do not want to do this.
Well, that's what made the Borg so terrifying is that there was no way to use diplomacy with them. There's none of the usual shit that Starfleet had spent generations working on, was worthy. Like, could do anything against that. And so they really had to be and the only way to deal with Borg is to wipe them the fuck out, which is also against Federation standards. I mean, so that's... It had a ton of action. A ton of action. You can do tons of stuff with the Borg, but it comes down to their values.
Hashtag Marcus was right. I mean, from a certain... That's one of the things I think is lacking in a lot of these kind of movies is the villain there has to be justifying it somehow. And I think, having Earth almost be destroyed is a really good justification to try and militarize Starfleet at all costs.
So, but with the Klingon minutes, while they're there, things go south because the Klingons have also been trying to figure out what to do after the Romulans, because they also got hit bad, and maybe there is a power or struggle between what do we do now here? Do we expand aggressively to make up for what was lost, or do we, go back in? And, the Enterprise crew gets stuck in the middle of that.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm still, wicked loving the diplomacy. I'm not sure. I question whether or not we have the background on Klingons as an audience to get into the wherewithal of their politics.
I mean, this would be...
Of their specific politics.
A way to introduce it to the audience.
True.
Yeah.
Like a Klingon diplomat that came to Earth first, hanging out with Uhura.
Oh my god, Worf.
Worf's grandpa. Or grandma. Whatever.
No, because the women... that would fix the women problem again. Can you imagine that? Oh, my God.
Well, also, as the crew of the Enterprise figure out how to deal with the Klingons on a diplomatic level, you know, what is their culture like? How can we, you know, make sure we're not accidentally offending? We, the audience, can learn what their culture is like, what they find offensive, things like that.
Yes. And vice versa. It would be a really good opportunity to, for the Enterprise to teach the Klingons, the audience, about the values of the Federation, the Starfleet, and the future, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's a better way of doing exposition.
Oh, yeah.
Show,
don't freaking tell.
If you can couch your information in stuff, one, that the audience actually wants to know, if it's interesting, they'll listen. But also, what's the word I'm thinking of? Exposition through inference is my favorite thing in the world. You know, you figure out that, oh, we're a spacefaring culture because we're in fucking space. Yeah. You know? Not because we're like, we are a spacefaring culture. No. You see a star field out the window. There.
Yeah.
The end.
Yeah.
You know, that's actually one of the things that really annoyed me about this movie. Way too much time is spent on frickin' Earth. Like I mentioned it before, you know, shining a flashlight from the Enterprise bridge during the finale. Yeah, you see Earth there the entire time. It took them 50 seconds to get there from Klingon space, but whatever. Yeah, it just irritated me. It's like, it's Star Trek.
Understandably.
Not Earth Trek.
It's not actually a Western, is it? No. We're in space. Alex, keep talking.
So that was one. I still have two more.
Go.
The other is the Admiral's plot. You know, he is Miltra, as a thing, but have it be more gradual. Like a, hey, what's with all these suspicious acquisitions? And it's like, who ordered, you know, 200 tons of steel? Well, and where did it go? You know,
Oh, to make the shipyards. Yeah. Oh, how did we get the practicalities of the secret shipyards?
Yeah.
You have to have the place to have it. It's space. It's hard to build shit up there.
Weren't they hiding it behind all the workers. Jupiter?
You have to have all the transport. You have to... The energy. Oh my God, you're right. It can't really be that secret, can it?
Yeah, no. And, you know, have them discover it in a better way than have it and Khan give them the Google pin.
Yeah, oh my God, that was so annoying. I'm not even sure really why he gave the Google pin. How did that work out? Like, what was the point of that?
I think Khan just felt like doing it for giggles.
That's not a good enough
reason. I think he was trying to play both sides against each other.
Did he?
I can see
guess.
That.
No,
it didn't really help him.
Better, it would have been
actually
great.
There was no way for Khan to have known that Kirk would have somebody on the ship who could go to the shipyard and get on successfully.
Well, he had a copy of the script. That's how.
Okay. Yeah.
No, that's why Spock Prime showed up. It's because he had a copy of the script, and he was like, "Okay, this is what's going on. Don't worry.
It's true, he did.
There's no reason for Spock Prime. He had a copy of the script. Okay.
Wait, what are you talking about? Magic blood? That makes no sense. We just killed him.
Wait. Your Khan is a white guy.
White? Yeah, that's strange.
Oh, I have a
picture.
I'm
pretty sure
actually
you're thinking of someone else.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, but wait, we're gonna get to you. Keep going, Al.
Right. And also during this time, Kirk is still demoted. He has not, throughout this entire thing, he has not gotten his captainship back. Because he was not captain for about 10 minutes.
That's true.
You've learned your lesson. Slap on the wrist.
Yeah. And so, go through all this. You know, keep Carol if you want. You know, maybe you have her be more suspicious. You know, what are your loyalties? Who knows? Not Fuck my dad!
Maybe she could have an actual reason to be on board and didn't fake her way on and prove that the security on all Starfleet vessels is apparently bullshit.
Yeah.
Maybe that.
I mean, that never surprised me.
Yeah. That's bullshit.
I've watched That's the original true. Series.
That might be the most Star Trek thing.
Someday, let me tell you guys. Said you're supposed to be-
Okay. So, yeah. Anyway, kind of moving this along. So second plot is military intrigue plot, sounds like.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And third plot. That's where you decide to keep Khan. Because apparently you decide to go with that. And fine. Okay. Just make Raph again. Except you can't. Because you already had most of that in the first movie.
Oh, whoops.
Remember? The whole entire her vengeance thing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
vengeance is
That was a big mistake, and this entire movie was making its theme vengeance.
Yeah, because you already had that. It's been done.
And that's not the feel of Star Trek. You know, the feel of Star Wars is in the title. You know, mm-hmm. It's war, it's rebellion. Star Trek is about the journey and the friends we made along the way.
Yeah.
Well, the movies are a little different. I mean, they tend to have a bit more action tropes. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, like, Wrath of Khan, it was more or less space Moby Dick. I mean, come on. They referenced Moby Dick several times throughout the movie. It was about as blunt, about as blunt as it could be. Kirk gets a copy for his birthday at the beginning of the movie. Christ. Khan makes several references to Moby Dick over the course of hunting Kirk. It's
amazing.
It's not very subtle.
Yeah.
I love you, Star Trek.
But the idea is that, but they did at least kind of make it a point of saying, like, hey, vengeance, it's not going to end well for you in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As opposed to this, just not.
That was not.
Okay.
Vengeance. It just kind of peters out and you punch a guy a lot and he'll
and
pass
you're
out.
Done. So, Al, let me sum up for you. So you have three potential solutions. Is that right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I still haven't finished Khan here
Oh,
yet.
Shit. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, not yet.
Yeah. You can't do Space Seed again because it only really works as an episode for my A now. Pippi, can you confirm?
No.
Okay. So, what do? Either remove Khan or have
my solution.
Have Khan and all of the Botany Bay unfrozen, and they have already all infiltrated Starfleet.
Oh. I like that.
What's yep.
So it becomes like a spy with super intelligent beings? Spy movie?
Yep. You know, and it also solves the why are all our senior command in one place is like sitting ducks?
Oh.
God, that was so dumb.
Because their staff arranged it.
Their staff arranged it and or they were the ones who wrote the protocols.
Yeah.
You know? Again, the that was a great part of the original, of the film that we are dissecting, is that, you know, that was pretty damn clever. You know, you create a destructive thing over here. Protocol says you all gather. That was the actual point of it, was to, you know, kill this. Yeah. That was a nice...
It's just there's...
It's a stupid protocol, though.
It is a stupid protocol, but it makes a lot more sense if you're basically pulling a Hydra and, which...
Well, it's a known thing in emergency services that if there's one, explosion or mass casualty planned thing, there is possibly going to be another one specifically,
targeting
the response.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, that's
Research.
A thing.
Research. Nice.
Which is why it was dumb of them in the case of a terrorist action, which was, for them all to meet in one place that was easily accessible with windows.
And why not in space with ships with around them? Yeah.
And
what
no
force fields?
Defenses.
Don't they have force fields?
It's hazy in the new TOS, yeah. They refer to shields, but it seems more like it's like an exterior armor plating, I think.
Okay.
It's not like Next Generation shields when they actually had the budget to make shields.
All right, I'll accept that this time.
So yeah,
I mean, heck, that could be one of the new military developments that Starfleet Defense has created, is the actual, like, force field, and ain't that cool?
Actually, I really like the idea of mixing yours, Bren, and Al's to the idea of, you know, here's this Secretary of Defense or what have you, Marcus's defense guy, and he brings on these people, or they bring themselves on, something like that. And that's part of the whole, he's being a puppet, essentially.
The best puppet doesn't know it's a puppet.
But, you know, so then there's all these protocols in place, and it actually makes these, you know, superhumans seem superhuman and intelligent, as opposed to what they currently are now, which is dumb.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Popsicles. All right, because we've been going on for a little while here, let's segue on over to Pip.
Hey Pip.
How's it going?
It's going okay. I have opinions.
Do it.
What?
Yeah. I know.
Could have fooled me.
Wild. So I'm going to start with just one small fix. And I actually mean it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
To at least kind of fix the problem where Carol did absolutely nothing but be naked and scream.
And get her leg broken.
She did get her leg broken. And she did disarm the torpedo, but that was
a false weird. It wasn't matter anyway, because it wasn't a real bomb, because there was a fucking dude inside, so it was fake anyway. Keep going.
Well, it
did have a warhead.
Did it?
It was armed.
Okay.
It could have exploded. It just also had a dude in it.
Okay.
But the thing is, Scotty and Carol were on the Vengeance at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Carol could very easily have been the one to sabotage the ship in some way. She could have done something useful while in enemy territory and made her loyalties straight up known, and helped the Enterprise.
That is an excellent point. Actually, that's one of my notes, is how long does it take to get Carol onto the bridge? Because there's a significant period of time after she's been beamed aboard the Vengeance.
USS Bickerdick.
USS Bickerdick. My apologies, yes. I should use the correct nomenclature. before she gets brought from, presumably, the transporter pad, which should not be that far, to the bridge. And there's like 20 minutes in between. So, yeah.
Well, she had to take a nap.
Naps are important.
Naps are very important.
Maybe if Khan had to take a nap.
There could have been like 20 minutes of Carol and Scotty having adventures in the Vengeance, and
There could have been a lot of things. There could have been, you know, there could have been so much.
I did like how Scotty had a lot more to do.
That's true. Scotty was very amusing and fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, and as Scotty should be.
Character.
Yeah. But I'm sorry, Pip, keep going. I'm assuming you have more than one crack.
Yes. My other thing is how they, if we had to use Khan, they totally fucked him up. They made it by casting Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
He was withdrawn and alien and cold.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas Khan is meant to be sort of charming and dangerous in a way you can't really stay away from.
I think it was like, what, infectiously charming?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's also emotionally abusive. He draws you in, he hurts you, he apologizes, you come back.
Wait, so he's Space Joker?
Kind of.
I get the impression that he's supposed to be a straight-up sociopath. I mean, and so we're talking about people who, they are, you know, the Jeffrey Dahmer types. They are incredibly charming, and that's part of what draws you in. And that's what makes them dangerous.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can sense that there's something wrong, you can't quite put your finger on it because, you know, he hasn't actually done anything.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they seem so nice. Well, that's why the casting was so brilliant the first time around, because, my God, what's-his-face there could, like, charm the socks off of a cat. I don't know.
I'm sure we could find, like, there's, like, lots of really good Indian-American actors that could, you know, be that level of charm
as
well.
Can I just throw out there? Remember Mohinder from Heroes?
Ooh.
Yeah. That hair by itself. just says to me, I want to trust you and fall in love with you.
Have him wear the plastic pec suit that Ricardo Montalban wore.
So I was actually scrolling through Memory Alpha, the Star Trek wiki.
Oh, me too. I did that earlier. High fives.
They actually talked about the casting of Khan and how they thought casting a person of color as a villain would be racist because he's a big bad and Indian. And I was all like, except you made this perfect human specimen white.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I mean, so there's...
And also, even if it's still racist, Khan in the original series, which is the timeline that has remained unchanged.
Ah, yes.
Or Khan comes from a time that has remained unchanged. He went into the ice in the 1990s.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So they actually just straight up changed his race, his canonical race.
Do you guys remember the eugenics wars back in the 90s? That was a weird time.
It was tough.
By the way, guys, don't tell them my secret.
So either, mm-hmm. If we want to keep this same plot, either we recast Khan into someone better. And I like Benedict Cumberbatch, but he was wrong for it.
I agree.
Or we at least say that you woke up a different person. That he's one of the other 72 and Khan is still asleep.
Well, yeah, I mean.
It's like the looming threat that Khan's gonna get woken up.
Or even just the danger that, of course, you wouldn't wake up Khan. He was the really problematic one. But this one was probably fine. He didn't do any, you know.
Well, actually, Khan was in the history books once you knew to look for him as the worst of the tyrants. Well, from the eugenics war.
You said he was, though. He was the worst of them? So, like, just don't... Mm-hmm. And so there could have been a great conversation. Also, describing the eugenics war, which wasn't brought up. Not in a, you know, really useful way. But it could have been in a, you know, like... But, of course, don't worry. We didn't wake up to that one. We're no fool. Well, okay.
Yeah.
But also, Alex's solution would work out here as well. I mean, yeah, you know, don't wake up Khan. Wake up his son. Maybe Khan got it on. Khan got it on with a lot of people. I don't remember what his lady love was in the original, but
MacGyver. No,
a crewman. I thought he seduced a crewman. Yeah, space seed.
He seduced a historian.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, that's right.
Because again, they're nerds on the Enterprise, so of course they have a historian on board.
Kirk was a fucking nerd. I keep paper books.
They reference Milton in Space Seed.
So, theoretically, maybe not Cumberbatch, but, you know, still, you could have had...
A reference, but without having it be overt.
Yeah.
And retreading old ground. Because that's the thing, like, I think part of what made Star Trek 2009 so popular was that it was more or less a fresh reboot. It wasn't rehashing an old Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
Well, also, it because of the change in the, you know, that there had been a change in the universe, you could have things like a ton more aliens around. In the original series, you know, who was with the Federation? Vulcans. That was pretty much it. Everybody else was like, go fuck yourselves.
Well, and the Andorans and the other people.
Yeah, whatever. Well, yeah. But the Andorans. But... You know, in these series, we have, you know, like, guy with a weird chip in the back of his head, and girl with funky this, and Orion slave girls are busy being not Orion slave girls, which I think is really, really cool. It allows for more diversity in our aliens, which is what the audience wants, while remaining true to what would have been going on at the time, if one makes certain assumptions about stuff. As opposed to, I think we've discussed, not on the podcast, but previously we've discussed, you know, the problems of... say Star Trek Enterprise, which was supposed to be set around Cochrane's time, I guess, shortly after, or so before the original series, where suddenly there are like 8 billion more aliens around. It's like, no, you're still within original canon, so all y'all aren't here. I want to see my gangster planets. Where are my Nazi planets? That's what...
Or it could have been like, hey, let's go mess shit up. We're humans and we haven't really figured out this intergalactic diplomacy shit yet.
But
so,
they had it on board. They had crewmen who were different aliens. It's like, that wasn't a thing.
No, not at that point in their history.
But it could be, but like now, with Enterprise's, with New Trek's canon, at least where they are now, you could have a bunch of different aliens because shit went differently. So there you go. That's why I like the original, the first one of these. And they should have built off of that, and we've discussed that by this point. Pip, I'm sorry. I've interrupted you again.
No worries. And if we want to talk about changing the theme of the movie, because Vengeance is a stupid theme.
Very stupid.
For this. I love you, Kat, but I don't care about the Prime Directive as much as you do.
Fuck you.
Yep.
Scandal.
Breaking hearts all over the place. But no, I want to bring it back to the notion of love and loyalty between the crew. Because the whole movie, Kirk is pissing everyone off, left, right, and center. No one wants to be around him. And no one wants to be around anyone else. And I'm like, no, I'm here for my space friends.
That's true. That's a very good point. And like the point of the mirror universe is that they were all at each other's throats. And that's why the mirror universe was bad.
And
awesome, obviously. But.
In the original episode Space Seed, there's a scene where Khan and the other super people, because he's woken them all up.
Which was smart. That's the smart move. Sorry, come on.
Yes. They're threatening the main command crew to help them take over the Enterprise, because as much reading as I've done, kind of difficult to take over a ship 200 years advance for them. And they've got Kirk in a decompression chamber, and they're like, you can watch him die. Unless you stand up and do something about it. And sure, they all want to help Kirk, but they've also got a fuck you attitude.
Yeah, they do.
With each other. And they know that Kirk wouldn't want them to do this. And Uhura, by the way, has the best fuck you eyes.
She's my hero.
Cause they want her to run the screen, cause she's the only one who can do it, apparently. And one of them slaps her, and everyone's all like, oh, fuck, no, you didn't. But they have blasters. And she just looks up with murder in her eyes, and continues to go to fuck all for them.
But yeah.
So I'm here for my space friends.
Okay. So how would you fix it to space friends?
Well, I would not do Wrath of Khan.
Okay. See, now you're getting back to my area where it's like,
good night, folks.
Where my solution was also not to do Wrath of Khan. I think it's very interesting the way that this broke up. You and I, while having different ideas about what the point should be, whereas mine's clearly right. But we did sort of say, let's go back down to bare basics. Let's go down to theme and make the movie about that. Whereas Bren and Al went in the direction of, let's see how much of this we can save, keeping...
It's a salvage job,
exactly. It's a salvage job. But still, I think that we all came with really good solutions. I'm really interested in what... As much as I love thing, I think I'm very interested in the way that Brendan and Alex decided to try to...
to be fair, wait, I have more.
Oh.
Just a little bit.
Of course.
To keep the idea of Wrath of Khan, like the idea of, we have all this old episodes, what can we do with that? You could have made a movie of a different episode.
Ooh. What's your suggestion?
There are like 80 of them.
Spock's
if
brain.
You include the
Spock's brain.
No, fuck you. if you include the unaired pilot that got folded into the menagerie.
Mm-hmm.
80 plots to choose from.
And
spin the wheel.
Yeah.
And then if you do one of those, you sort of have the idea of Wrath of Khan. Cause like, they're doing for this second movie like they did with the last second movie, but we don't have all that baggage.
Mm-hmm. The problem is that I think that there was a lot of thought about how The Wrath of Khan was a fantastic movie. It was the first really good Star Trek movie, I think. And, it, you know, it pulled off of a really great episode, but it had the backstory. It was, there's this great phrase about fandom being the point of a long spear. You know, so yeah, you get the point all the way at the front, but you get all the spear behind it to thrust it home. I mean, which was what made Wrath of Khan work. We don't have the long spear here, you know, to make that kind of thing. We're still developing, we're still making the spear.
I think that there's a missed opportunity to come back to all the sort of, backstory elements that get dropped in for an episode and then forgotten for the next one because they didn't have season-long arcs. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, did you know that when Kirk was a kid, he witnessed a different genocide?
What?
What?
During
okay,
the
episode... Let's hear this.
During the episode Conscious for the King, Conscious of the King, there are some players come to the Enterprise, you know, for reasons of culture stuff, they like plays, and Kirk recognizes one of the actors as this warlord who starved a planet when he was a kid.
Like you do. Whoops.
Damn.
Very few people survived, including Kirk. He was a really young kid, so he doesn't remember a lot of it, plus there was trauma.
Yeah.
So part of it is him trying to convince everyone that this is a thing.
Oh no, gaslighting.
Oh, shit. The guy actually feels guilty and is trying to turn his life around or something. It's been a long time since I watched the episode. And I should have rewatched it for this, but whatever. So you could have gone back to that. How does that go down in this universe?
Yeah. That's...
Okay, so your fix is addressing kind of like this genocidal warlord plotline, perhaps?
One of the other really good things that happen in the original series.
So yours is the practical fix. Yours is the practical, which is, you know, how do we make this for modern... In terms of making a second Star Trek, New Trek film for the audiences to solve the problems that I brought up, which is, you know, we need to follow up with the first one. We need to bring in New Guard and stuff like that. Yours is to go back to the well, but just a different well.
Well, yes, a not poisoned one. You know, and we reference the old episode. It brings in the old people. They go, oh, yes, I recognize this. Mm-hmm. You tell the story in a new way so that all the new people can go, oh, look how fun this is. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And all the old people can go, this is just like this old episode. You should watch it. And it brings the new people into the old series.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. I like that. So, Pip, how do you imagine, like, the destruction of Vulcan playing into all this? Like, as far as, like, the connective tissue between the first movie and, say, connecting to a pre-existing episode?
Well, the death of Vulcan does throw a wrench into a lot of things. Wait, now that I'm thinking about it. Vulcan, the rest of the Vulcan race, is now severely underpopulated. Mm-hmm. They mate every 7 years.
Yeah, they do. Well, that becomes into play in the third movie. Now, are you suggesting that some of the third movie stuff should have come in on the second?
Possibly.
Because I thought that was a great moment in the third movie where we're like, no, sure, you know, like, this is some shit we need to talk about.
Yeah, and I totally fine with it in the third movie. I need to rewatch the third movie because I forgot about that.
Okay, wait, we actually probably shouldn't. Alex hasn't seen it at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh man, Al, it's on Amazon Prime.
I know. It's on Netflix, isn't it?
I don't know.
Or is it on Hulu?
I don't think
so. Who knows? It's on something.
It might be on Hulu.
We'll watch it later.
It's available. Mm-hmm. It's a great movie.
Yeah, Spock has concerns about whether or not he should join the Vulcan bang bus.
Which, to be fair, I mean, that's a legit concern. You know?
But
yeah.
Also, Spock technically has a fiance. Did she die on Vulcan?
Good question. Oh, shit.
Wait, does Uhura know about his fiance?
He was a fiance from childhood. That's the way they do it. Crazy Vulcan sex things.
Notwithstanding.
They were betrothed. If I were a real nerd, I'd remember the exact language that they use when they see each other again, but yeah. I don't because I'm a failure.
You are. Fake geek girl. That's what you are.
I know. Listen, I know her name's T'Pring. I know she brings another dude over to the ceremony.
Yeah, she does.
And I had this whole theory about how Kirk and Spock had symbolic sex during that episode.
Okay, that's what everybody's theory is. It's not original, Pip. Go home. You're drunk. Mm-hmm. So, wrapping up a little tiny bit here. So, if we had to vote on one treatment, if we had to vote on one plot, would we vote on any, like, who do you think would be the one we'd want to see in theaters? And or, is there a version that we'd want to make out of all of ours?
Well, I think mine could work as a separate movie than what you guys are doing.
So you want to be the follow-up?
Yeah.
I think the feeling of mine should infuse something of what you guys are doing. I accept that the Klingon plot is perhaps one that is not the popular favorite.
Well, that's the thing. If we somehow tied in, I'm kind of a fan of fusing ideas together because that's partly what a collaborative storytelling effort is supposed to be, is taking the good elements, right? So, you know, again, I like, you know, Pip's elements of actually having more interpersonal drama, and we can actually maybe do some more references to perhaps one of the Klingon episodes. I forget which particular episodes the Klingons show up in, the travel tribbles and all that.
Captain Koloff was in that one. I looked it up. Yeah.
But we can have, some reference to that, you know, maybe tribbles. Oh, God, no, not for a movie. I was like, oh, Tribbles could play a key element.
I was thinking how much fun a Naked Time movie would be, even though it would never work.
No. But I'm thinking, the thing is, I kind of like the ideological differences between the Federation and the Klingon Empire. And again, if the movie execs are really wanting to have we need to have some solid grounding with prior IP in order to guarantee revenue, whatever, we got to have a reference to one of the other successful movies, and we got to have Khan and Space Seed for reasons, then we can maybe mix in some of the other elements that Al and I brought in, where it's like, you know, the false flag war with the Klingon Empire. Man, I lost my train of thought. No. So we mix in the, help me out here. We can mix in, Al's plot of having this kind of, I'm sticking with that, you know, Hydra operatives storyline, because I think that's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. But I'm liking, I still have it stuck in my head having the Admiral be the defense head of Starfleet, and
that.
It's all one big power play on his part. I mean, heck, if we have to have the Botany Bay people, they're pushing him in that direction, because what's easier to take over as far as, you know, their overall plans? They've realized that it's not about taking over Earth anymore. It's about taking over the frickin' galaxy.
Exactly.
And
that's part of Space Seed.
And wouldn't it be easier if he had a highly militarized, more fascist Starfleet and Federation, and then maybe a few years down the line, Khan takes over, and boom, you have, you know, more or less mirror-mirror universe Starfleet is the attempt happening.
You try to make the mirror-mirror.
I love that. Pip, you might know this. Were they long-lived as well, or were they just...
To the best of my knowledge, they don't mention a lifespan, though I think it can be assumed that it's longer, because they are
Peak human.
Yeah, they're peak human, genetically superior in every way. Khan can lift Kirk with one arm, that sort of thing.
Okay. So it's in their it's in their best interest to play the long game.
Yeah.
And they have the wherewithal and intelligence to do so. All right, cool. So I think the winner for me out of all of this is honestly Bren's change to making a defense. I think that's such
the power play in space.
Yeah, I think that's such a key change, and it's also one that is really approachable. You know, it's yeah. it's not without having to rewrite the entire script, although obviously you would. But
I mean, to that point, we could potentially drop the Benedict Cumberbatch segment there and just have it in favor of this mm-hmm. more political military intrigue story that Al was pushing.
Yeah, yeah.
So, because okay. I don't know, for me at least, a bigger story drive is what's driving the characters.
Yes,
and then a lot can fall down from that. You know, it can help you make stories that make sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't make sense to just have Khan in the original movie do a lot of what he does just yeah. for the yucks. Like, oh, why don't you open up one of those torpedoes and find out? It's like, well, why don't you just tell us? You could have saved us an hour of time. Come on, man.
Yeah, he could have played the emotional card right there. And had them on their side.
It would have worked.
That would have been keeping him more with both of them, both more with Starfleet and more with the eugenics people, you know, using the emotional thing. And then Starfleet being like, well, of course we'll unfreeze your people. What?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean.
That makes sense. We're not monsters.
Womp womp. We were cruelly frozen back in the day. For what? Nothing. So.
No reason. Stop talking.
Why were you frozen?
It was a really warm day. We wanted to cool off.
You don't happen to have a historian on board, do you?
No.
No?
Excellent. Awesome. And then that would have been a great use for Spock Prime as opposed to what he actually was, which was the guy who had the script.
Yeah.
By the way, Wrath of Khan was a movie. You should watch it, kids.
Just FYI. Just putting that out there.
Oh, man, it's much better than what's going on here.
Peace.
All right.
Back to the bag bus. Bye. That's how Vulk or Spock Prime passes.
That's what he's doing with all his time. He's just like fucking everywhere. Just like, oh, it's like oh, Unity yeah. where when Pierce leaves this mortal realm, he's left a gallon of sperm for everybody in the study group. That's just like what he's.
Ew.
And for Kirk, a vial of sperm.
He knows why. Oh, also, I nearly forgot. I threatened back when we started talking about this that yep. my immediate suggestion for every story would be to make it more queer.
Go.
This movie is begging for it.
I agree.
So to speak.
I seem to recall you saying there was a polyamorous relationship or something going on.
Totally. Between Spock, Uhura, Kirk, Bones... And, yeah, the four of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where mostly it's...
Scotty sometimes,
you know, for a lark, but he's not actually part of the relationship.
I feel like Scotty's busy with Keener and just watches from the side.
Don't judge him. But no, it's mostly Spock and Uhura and Kirk and Bones, but KG Kirk goes and hangs out with Spock and Uhura, and Spock goes hangs out being a euphemism, with
Bones.
Kirk and Bones. When it's just Kirk and Spock off... Bones and Uhura drink and gossip about their boyfriends.
I think that's...
Like, they're the ones not actually involved in that way, but they're very, very close friends.
I think that's the real movie. I think... And it's the friends we made along the way. That we slept with.
Yep. Listen, it's a brave new world.
New frontiers.
Yeah.
So I guess we can start wrapping this up.
Yeah.
So that was Star Trek Into Darkness and our random story treatments for it.
Our extremely well-informed story treatments.
Oh, yes. Yes, we did our homework. We didn't just use this as an excuse to watch a movie over the weekend.
What?
So, listeners, as always, if you have a story to submit, head on over to nostoryissacred.com/submission. You can follow us on Twitter at No Story Is Sacred or send an email through contact@nostoryissacred.com. Yeah, pitch us something on Twitter.
And we'll make up a story for it.
Oof. And as you've seen tonight, we can just go in all sorts of directions. About four of them. Editing for this episode is done by me, Brendan. And the transcript and show notes will be available on the website at nostoryissacred.com. Thanks for listening, everyone, and see you next time when Kat will use a random troops generator to come up with a plot and then we're going to take apart the results. Until then, where no story is sacred, and any story can be changed.
And I think we've proved that tonight. Thank you, everyone.
Good times.
This was Brendan.
This was Kat.
This was Pippin.
And this was Alex.
And we're... No story is sacred.